stories don't define you. How you tell them will.
Hi, I'm Sarah Elkins, your host and chief story maker at Elkins Consulting. In my work with coaching clients, I guide people to improve their communication using storytelling as the foundation of our work together. What I've realized over years of coaching and podcasting is that the majority of people don't realize the impact of the stories they share on their internal messages and on the people they're sharing them with. My work with leaders and people who aspire to be leaders follows a similar path to the interviews on my podcast, uncovering pivotal moments in their lives and learning how to share them to connect more authentically with others, to make their presentations and speaking more engaging, to reveal patterns that have kept them stuck or move them forward, and to improve their relationships at work and at home. When you're ready to get started collecting your own stories, my book, Your Stories Don't Define You, How You Tell Them Will, is available in all the regular places, and the audiobook version is now available on Google Play and on my website, elkinsconsulting.com. As a special bonus for listeners, the audiobook includes two songs recorded by my band, Spare Change, in my living room in Montana. Keep an eye out for announcements through LinkedIn and via my Elkins Consulting Facebook and Instagram pages, or visit my website, elkinsconsulting.com, to learn more. Also on my website is a free podcast interview checklist. It's available to download to make sure you make the most of your next podcast interview.
Well, this is a treat. I have not had a conversation with Michelle Talbert in, it's probably been at least 2 years since our first conversation, maybe three, but I have been following her work for all this time, and I'm so excited to get a chance to have this conversation with you, hosting you on Your Stories Don't Define You, How You Tell Them Will. Thanks for joining me today, Michelle.
Sarah, thank you so much for the invitation. I'm excited to talk with you.
Well, it's been a really long time, and I remember, I have such a vivid memory of our conversation from those years ago, and just the beautiful way you have with words in explanation of your feelings. That was what really struck me, is that you present your feelings in a way that is so clear and not abrupt. I don't know. Does that make sense?
I get it. I didn't know that, but I get it.
I love it. It's with compassion. You present it with compassion and non-judgment. And I think that was what really struck me about that first conversation. So, Michelle, before we get into your stories, I would love for you to tell our audience something that you're doing right now, your income-related activities that really lights you up.
Oh my gosh. Well, as we're recording, this is 2020, the year that no one shall speak of once it is done. And at the beginning of the year, I very naively opened a co-working space in January of 2020.
Timing.
Yeah, is everything. And so it was really beautiful. And it is still. Let me not speak of it as if it's in the past. We're blessed to still be here. In January of 2020, I opened a space called Her Power Space here in South Florida, in Broward County, where I live. And it is a woman forward, men welcoming, boutique co-working space, podcast studio, meeting event space, virtual office. And, you know, we're small. It was funded by my day job and different types of donations of goods and services from the community. And we opened with our purpose to be a place where people who are side hustlers, you know, those who are working on their day job from 9 to 5 and working on their daydreams from 5 to midnight, could come and work on their businesses and get the information and resources and connections that they needed. And so we opened the doors January 12th. We had almost 100 people come through just at the grand opening alone. We were sold out, and needless to say, COVID hit. So on March 31st, I locked the doors, and amid a possible COVID scare with my daughter, who my daughter and son were in the DC area, I hopped on a plane on March 31st. first and headed to DC to be with my children, and was there for 6 weeks. And by the time I returned to her power space, we had pivoted to an online summit that I created called No Small Business Left Behind. I was really tired of hearing about big bailouts and businesses being too big to fail. And the loss of small businesses was devastating. And I just wanted to bring people together to get information that they could stay afloat, that they could survive and hopefully thrive. Mm-hmm. So we've been doing this No Small Business Left Behind summits ever since, focusing on small business owners and getting them the resources they need. So some is monetized, some isn't. I am not a not-for-profit, but unfortunately was not profitable during this time. But we're still getting it together. So it still lights me up. We do have people who come into the space now. We take lots of precautions to keep people safe. And fortunately, blessings, we have not had any COVID cases that have come out of anyone coming through the space. So that is what I'm still doing, which is, you know, being a place for people to come and work on their dreams, side hustlers, solopreneurs especially, and to get their mail, because we were able to incorporate a scanning service. So when the mail comes, instead of them having to come into the office to pick that up, they can add on a scanning service and we'll scan the documents to them so they can also stay home and stay safe, but still get their mail.
Wow. You really thought about some important details. Of course, this resonates with me, not just the space and the issues and the shutdown and the pivots, but this whole idea of people having a place to build their side hustle to make it their dream. Mm-hmm. I mean, to me, I did that for so many years. I had the name Elkins Consulting for 20 years. Yeah, and I didn't actually make it my exclusive employment until 2.5 years ago.
That's beautiful that you did it, though.
Yeah, well, I have to admit, I have some luxuries that a lot of people probably don't. For one thing, I live in Montana, and at least during COVID, I've been able to get outside a lot. And even in midwinter, when it's 12 degrees outside, I can bundle up. I have all the gear I need. That's intentional, of course. I won't go outside if I don't have the right gear, but I have all the gear I need. I can bundle up. I go out and I hike on a mountain behind my house. And I do have a partner, my husband, that is employed full time. And so, as happened to most small businesses this year, my income took a hit. But I have the luxury of being able to rely on a partner's income. And I know a lot of people that don't have that luxury. So I don't take that for granted for a second. I'd like to acknowledge that so that it doesn't sound like I'm coming from a place of struggle in the same way that many others are.
Absolutely. I mean, I feel the same way, right? Because I just feel like being able to be healthy in my body is something that I don't take for granted. I've been blessed. Unfortunately, my daughter's tested, come back negative. So none of us have, fortunately, none of us have been impacted in our physical health. And that matters, right? So you find the blessings where they exist. So yeah, economically devastating, physically blessed, family blessed. So we count the blessings where we are.
Totally agree. And it's interesting you bring that up, because I just had a conversation with somebody about this whole idea of the complexity of holding space for joy and sorrow, that being able to hold space for that gratitude and the joy at being with family, of being healthy, and understanding that complexity of trying to have both without it being conflicting, you know, because you don't want that conflict. You just want to be able to blend the two together and still experience both in the way that you need to.
Absolutely. I totally agree.
Yeah. Oof. Wow, we started deep, didn't we?
We did. We went heavy. Again, the year that shall never be spoken again.
Oh, I don't know. I'm a storyteller. I talk about collecting stories. And when you said that, all I could think was, no way. We're going to have so many great stories to share when we've fully processed this experience, when we've come to a place far enough after it to be able to look back and identify particular moments of joy and sorrow that have long-term implications on how we see ourselves and our place in the world.
Absolutely. I mean, we literally just shot video for our 1-year anniversary 2 days ago. So that will come out in January. And there's a lot of storytelling there about what 2020 looked like, what our first year looked like. And I captured that, you know. So, no, I totally agree with you. I'm being facetious when I say that.
Of course. But a lot of people do. You know, they do go there and they just see the whole year as being horrendous without really acknowledging small joys and interesting dynamics we've experienced, the learning opportunities. I like to call them opportunities for growth.
we've grown this year. I mean, I think, but you can understand it. I mean, even you said yourself, once we're far enough removed, right? Mm-hmm. I think I know when I have, you know, a headache or I have some type of other acute pain, that's all that's on my mind. If you've ever had a toothache or, God forbid, dry socket, I got dry socket once, there was nothing I could focus on other than that. Pain.
Exactly.
So when you're in the midst of 2020, you don't want to talk about it. You're living it. I don't want to talk about it. I'm in it. There's nothing else to talk about. Can we talk about something else?
Exactly.
But you can't even focus on anything else because the pain is so acute. So I completely, you know, I meet people where they are and just understand that we're all sort of walking different journeys along this path of life and trying to maintain whatever that looks like for each of us individually.
And keeping each other company on that journey. If we can't fix it for them, at least we can walk beside them or be there. I think that's the key to this year, is walking beside people on their journeys.
For sure. I mean, that's really, like I said, the No Small Business Left Behind Summit, because I was in bed curled up for days, you know, in a fetal position. And I have a community of about 2,000 women, entrepreneurs, solopreneurs, side hustlers online that we've been cultivating for 5 years and being there for each other and showing up for one another. And I just felt like I got punched in the gut and I turned very much inward. And it wasn't until I said, you know what, I got to get over my own stuff right now. I'm not the only one. This is a global pandemic that feels very personal.
Yes.
But the reality is, girl, get out of bed, because nothing's going to change if you don't get out of bed.
What was your trigger?
That was...
Did somebody call you or...
No, I don't even think I can point. It was just a self-talk moment. You know, if you've ever heard the term come to Jesus, Jesus came to me and Jesus came to me. He was like, girl, pick up your bed. There is a story in the Bible about that. Are you serious about getting well? Yes, I'm serious, Jesus. Then pick up your bed. So, and I don't want to make light of the fact that everybody couldn't do that, right? So I've said that at the outset, that I was blessed to have my physical health. But for me, what I know about myself is that if I don't focus on me, I do much more than when I do focus on me. In other words, if I know that other people are looking to me, I was a single mom in college and law school. I got up every day because my kids needed me to get up every day. If I had to just be at my own devices, I would still be in bed up in Ithaca at Cornell, right? Michelle, are you going to graduate anytime soon? And so for me, I said, you know, there were a lot of women in our community who were also hurting, whose businesses were also suffering. And so I literally just turned on my camera and hit Instagram Live every day and did what I called her power, her lights, instead of highlights, her lights, and highlighted a different woman-owned business every day. They didn't even know I was doing it. People would say, did you see Michelle was talking about you on Instagram today? What? I just did it. And it was the one thing that I was determined to do every single day. And so I don't even know how many days I did it. I didn't count. I didn't keep an account of record. I just knew that if I could do that one thing a day, I was successful that day, even if nothing else got done, and focused outward.
Right.
Yeah. And then from there, it just sort of snowballed into other activities and people reaching out to me. And, you know, we just kind of loved up on each other. And there were a lot of times when, you know, we're all asking each other, hey, what's your Cash App? Can I send you a couple bucks? And people asking me, what's your Cash App? Can I send you a couple bucks? I just want to sow a seed into you. I know it doesn't cover the rent, but, you know, if it can buy you groceries or something like that, I got you.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, I love that. I love that. And, you know, I think that that's not unusual to be motivated and inspired by your responsibilities or your sense of responsibility to a community or people. Mm-hmm. I think you're right that once you start focusing outward, it makes it far simpler for you to make the decision to get out of bed.
Gretchen Rubin has a really great book called The Four Tendencies. Mm-hmm. And there are four different archetypes that she discusses in depth. And it's a really great book. And, you know, all of us straddle different types of personality types. I am definitely someone who asks a lot of questions and would fall into her category of a questioner. But and it's all about motivating factors, what motivates us to do the things we do. And some people are internally driven. In other words, you might see an athlete or an Olympic athlete who just gets out of bed and runs 10 miles in the morning without being prodded, right? And then there are people like me who are outwardly motivated. And so what that means is, and she gives an example of, I would be the person who goes to the gym with an accountability partner, and we each swap a sneaker. Because that means that if I don't show up tomorrow, you can't work out. It's not about me not being able to work out. I will show up because I have to give you your sneaker work out. And that is, knowing that about myself lets me know how I need to set things up to be able to be successful. I know that my community needs me to do X, I will do X. If I know that I need me to do X, it can be a negotiation. and that's just the reality. I used to give myself a really hard time about being that way and not understanding why I couldn't be self-motivated. The reality is I'm just not. And you give yourself grace for that and find out, okay, so then what is the trigger for me to do the thing I say I want to do or need to do?
I have to find an accountability partner. Mm-hmm. That's what that is. Mm-hmm. You know, that's really interesting because it dovetails into some conversations I had a couple of years ago, maybe a year ago, when I was really focused on the word resilience. Mm. And I interviewed a series, and I did like six interviews of women and a couple men on the topic of resilience. And what I found in those interviews is that people's resilience really comes from different places. And it's really similar to what you were just talking about. One woman, was diagnosed with stage 4 breast cancer, the kind that is really unlikely to, you're going to survive. The prognosis is really not good. And she had two teenage girls at home, two teenage mm-hmm. daughters and a single mom. And I met her because our local Lawson Foundation, which is an organization that does big fundraisers to help people with medical bills, selected her as their recipient for one of their concerts. And they have musicians from all over this region come in and play for 45-minute sets and then switch. And so you end up with like 18 different musicians or musical groups throughout the course of a day on like three different stages. And my band was playing for this event, even though we didn't know her. We often volunteered for these events because we had such a good following of fans that would contribute, you know, to the financial goals for that group. And so that's how I met this woman. So that was, I want to say 10 years ago or so. And I interviewed her, and her resilience really came, like you, from her sense of responsibility. It was this internal piece of her identity that she is a responsible person. She always took care of her younger sisters, and she was going to take care of her daughters. And that's what motivated her toward building that resilience and being able to survive. And she is still kicking. This woman is, I consider her like the tree of life for me.
Wow, that's awesome.
Every time I think of her, I think of her as a mighty oak. This woman is just fabulous. But anyway, so, and another woman, her resilience came from her desire to thrive in this life. She decided that survival wasn't enough, that if she was going to live, it was going to be fully lived. And so just getting by wasn't enough for her. And that's where she found her source of resilience, was that drive to have a living, livable life.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. And it's totally different. These are, and it, does that sound familiar? Does it sound kind of like what Gretchen Rubin was talking about in the book?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Huh.
Absolutely.
That's I'm going to exactly have to read that book.
Yeah, exactly. And it's great because it helps to give you language to understand it, because when you're in it, oftentimes, whatever you are there, you know, because there's the rebel, I guess there's four different archetypes, the rebel who does the opposite of whatever you tell them to do. The questioner,
that would be me.
Like me, right? The questioner who's me, like, don't tell me to do something just because we've always done it that way. And then the outwardly and inwardly motivated folks. And so, you know, giving you words when people around you may lean towards something that's not what you are, you begin to feel very odd. You feel like, why am I not like that? Why can't I fit in? Right. And so many of us feel like misfits. And the reality is we're all misfits. No two of us are the same. Even, even you know, the identical twins have some differences in personality types.
My mom is an identical twin.
Oh,
I hear
that's
that.
So interesting. Yeah. We have a lot of twins in my family. And, yeah, they're completely different people. And so, you know, to be able to see, oh, my gosh, you know what? It's not that they're right or I'm wrong or vice versa. It's we're simply different. And I think that that can really cut through almost every area of most of our lives, is to be able to say to people, we're just different. You know, I have a thing I say on social media, because, you know, social media can be a really interesting place to have conversations. And, you know, when people say certain things, I have a very standard response, and that is I do not debate opinions. Opinions to me should not be debated, especially on a forum like that, because I'm not here to change anyone's opinion. I can share what mine is, and then what you do with that information is up to you. But it's not a debate. It's a sharing of opinions. And we can agree to disagree. And whatever that looks like in your world is fine. And so, again, just letting people be who they are, where they are. And how I interact with them is what I have control over.
Right.
So I think that's really what it all boils down to. But when you don't have the verbiage for it, when you don't have that level of understanding, you do feel like, oh my God, I'm just so different. Why am I so different?
Well, I love this approach for a couple of reasons. And one of the big reasons is that it seems to take a non-judgment approach and toward yourself and toward others. And I think sometimes we forget that we are judging ourselves as much as we're judging others.
More.
Yeah, well, in some cases, I don't know. I've known some people that seem to be very judgy outwardly and don't really self-reflect enough to judge inwardly.
No, I judge myself more, but I know that they're... I've heard it said that we judge other people through a magnifying glass and judge ourselves through rose-colored glasses.
Right. And it's neuroscience. I mean, there's a reason we do that. It's a survival mechanism to think that we're better at something than we really are. Mm. But that's pretty funny. So Michelle, when you think about when you first decided to get out of bed and your first thing was to do, was it your first thought to do this highlight her light?
Absolutely. And that's what I got out of bed to do. I got out of bed.
Who was the first one? Like, was there something that just popped in your head? Like this person or this?
Yeah, because someone else had opened a space not too long after I did. And her space, Ann Lash Beauty Bar, she opened her space. She was in our community. We interacted for a number of years through her Power Moves organization. And she would show up and vend and interact and do gift baskets for our community. And then she had an opportunity to open her own spa and took a leave of absence from her full-time job to do so. And COVID hit the week after her grand opening. We were shut down. And she's a high touch business.
Of course.
So because of doing lashes and esthetician services and things of that nature, waxing, et cetera, sugaring, all these things I hadn't heard of before in lots of ways, but she's great at it. And she poured, just like I did, all of her day job funds into her business. And, she was the first person I her lighted because I knew if nothing else, she and I got it, you know? And she would say, I was inspired to open my space because you opened yours. And so I really felt a sense of responsibility there too. Right. It might sound overinflated to someone listening, but when it comes to my community, I really know the role that I play in terms of a leadership role. And so I care greatly about ensuring the safety and mentally, physically, financially of my community. So when she said, you know, I saw you could do it, I could do it too. And that's like, oh, awesome. And then boom, COVID.
Yeah.
Right. So.
And then you feel somewhat responsible for, even though you know that it's not your fault. So maybe there's another word for that. Maybe you just feel compelled because you understand that you can contribute. And so you must contribute. So you're compelled to contribute.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So did she see the first Her Light? Did she see it?
She did. She did end up seeing it.
Did she cry?
I don't know. I have no idea if she cried or not. I
would have cried. I'm not a crier.
I'm not a crier.
That would totally tear me up for sure to see somebody step up like that on my behalf.
No, I think that's just the nature of our community. We all do it for each other, and we're all weepy all the time, but none of us really cry. We're all just full, walking around like full and emo all the time. But it's just really, I don't even know, you know, right? But that is what we look like. And, you know, the thing about it was I wasn't doing it for her reaction to me. So honestly, I didn't focus on it. I just know, you know, she said, thank you. And I really don't remember much after that. Because I was still kind of in a haze. Yeah.
and you were on to, okay, that worked. What's next?
Right.
I mean, I think when you're you're basically getting on a bike and you took one rotation with that pedal and you started to get some forward movement. And so you knew you needed to move your left foot next.
Yep.
Like, if I stop now, the bike's going to crash.
Exactly. So topple right over.
That next. I think that's part of what we do at the beginning of that kind of getting out of that hole that we dug ourselves in, is that we just have to get that forward momentum. And so we're not really thinking about what the last rotation looked like because we're on to the next rotation.
Exactly. But that's small business life in a nutshell. Right.
Your whole experience is like that. But I think it's also, and tell me if you agree with this, I think it's also really important, because that's the case, that we do take moments to look at that last rotation of the wheel and say, okay, this worked, this didn't work, this was my impact, so that we can start collecting our stories of those situations. And the reason I say that is I just went through this great workshop with David Hutchins. Anyway, it's this great program that I went through. It's like a 4-week program. And he talked about building your assets and stories being assets for your business. And he's absolutely right. The reality is that if we don't collect stories of our business, of our experiences, the failures, the perceived failures, I should say, the recoveries, the clients that made a difference, the clients that made us crazy, when we collect those stories, then we have these assets to use in our promotion, in our client conversations, in our everyday work. Like, this is really important.
Yeah, I totally agree. Actually, you know, one of the hats I wear is I'm a relationship marketing strategist. And so when it comes to capturing information, data, especially with the social media platforms and creating and curating content for social media. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we had so much content for the video that's going to be put together, not just in terms of the storytelling that I did, but testimonials and videos that people have submitted and pictures from the last 11 months, 12 months. So absolutely, I don't say I don't look back. I think it's very important that you do. In fact, I often, especially when I work with women in corporate America, you know, really strongly advise that if they don't have an Attagirl file, that they create one, you know,
yes.
That pat on the back that you can look at when you, especially when you're feeling deflated, and you can open this folder and say, oh my gosh, that was that time I closed that deal for that client. Oh my gosh, that was that time I did XYZ, or, you know, the partner acknowledged that I busted my ass, or sorry if I can't say that word, you know, really
I'm
just, you know, to be able to look back on the good, because oftentimes, especially when we are in the midst of crises, or as some people say, our inner toddler shows up, we can't focus, right? We're just,
right.
And it's not a bad thing. It's just a reality. And so to be able to have something tangible to look at, I do go back through pictures and emails and things that I've captured that people have said about how our community has impacted them positively. And I do that, and I don't feel badly about it. I used to be like, oh, this is a little self-aggrandizing, but it's not my words. It's theirs. So I've gotten over that.
Right, exactly. Better let them tell the story than to try to tell it yourself.
Exactly. So I totally agree with you. So I might not look at the very last rotation on the bicycle, but I might look at where we started, when we started, when we left the house. And say, okay, how did we do that? Because you also have to be able to course correct. You have to, you know, Peter Drucker said, what isn't measured, it can't be managed. And so you do have to measure and manage. And that's in every aspect of our lives, from business to personal relationships to, you know, what we're going to put into our body with regard to nutrition. So I think you're absolutely right. We do have to capture stories, and whether we look at them as assets and in some cases liabilities, but no matter what, you still can't measure it unless you know what's going on.
Right. Well, I don't think a story can be a liability if you tell it right.
That's an interesting perspective.
Yeah, because I think it's also important to collect, when you're collecting your Attagirl stories, knowing that there was a oh shit story right before that. You know, like I think a lot of the most powerful stories that we hear and experience are the ones where we hit an obstacle and found a way around it, and were creative and resourceful, or had the right team or mentor to be resilient and persistent to get through it. I think sometimes those stories are as powerful, if not more powerful, internally for us to use as evidence. Anytime things go wrong, we have this evidence piled up behind us that says, yeah, well, something went wrong before and we got out of it, and we actually made something awesome as a result.
No, I totally agree. And I also do think that there are certain stories that we need to stop telling ourselves too, though, right?
Yes.
Like, I can't manage money. I don't know how to manage money. I'm not good with math. You know, I'm fat. I'm stupid. Whatever those are, or where they ever they came from, I do believe those could be liabilities and need to go or be rewritten in some shape or form.
And that's
those are stories.
The key.
Yeah.
Telling it differently. You know, saying the story of I'm not very good with money, I can't manage money, and changing that to, well, this one time I was able to negotiate a refinance of my house that actually really benefited us, you know, and telling a very specific story about a time when you did manage well.
Right. I think the specificity makes the difference as well, because we can often find that silver lining. Or the actual silver itself.
Right. And start reminding us, well, you're not bad at everything related to math.
Right.
And just because you failed an algebra class in 10th grade doesn't mean that you can't budget for your household and groceries. Like,
exactly.
There are so many different aspects of math. So when somebody does those general, I'm not good at math, I'm like, really? You don't think so, huh? When was the last time you went grocery shopping? How did you manage that?
I can figure out math. The best thing for me to do algebra is to send me to the store to get clothes. Or cute clothes, I can figure out a sale. What, that's 30% off? Okay, I can do that right away.
Exactly. And that's why I think it's so important to tell those very specific stories and not generalize like that.
Absolutely.
That's cool. So I want to get back to some of your stories, more specific stories. When you decided to start Her Power Hustle, is that what that was, that first iteration, right?
Yeah, that was the podcast back in 2015, correct?
Yes, I remember that.
You do.
I do. Well, I told you, I told our audience, I've been following you because I remember when you moved from the North Mid-East Coast down to Florida and followed that dream of living in a place without snow. I'm watching because it's meaningful. Your adventure, your journey is meaningful to a lot of people, and you never know who's watching and who's being inspired by it. So just so we're clear here, you know, this is important to me.
It's mutual. It's definitely mutual. Yeah,
so tell me, when you did Her Power Hustle, what was one situation that, well, let's talk about what a perceived failure that you managed to get yourself out of.
Well, Her Power Hustle was the result of a perceived failure. At the end of my second marriage, I started online dating, and I was just turning 40. I turned 40 probably 3 weeks after I left him, and was online dating as this 40-year-old woman who was pretty much an empty nester in Washington, D.C., and met a guy who was a firefighter in D.C., and we had what we call a whirlwind love affair, and it ended in heartbreak. And we went our separate ways, but ended up coming back together as friends to co-author a book about online dating in your 40s. And after divorce and with grown children, and this was 2011, right? So we went around the country, believe it or not, talking to people about online dating in your 40s and 30s and after divorce and things of that nature. And I had an idea for a particular piece of technology that I wanted to have developed to have help people in the online dating world. And so I immersed myself into social media because we were doing that anyway. That's how we were getting all the opportunities, and we got featured in Ebony magazine because of social media use. But also I wanted to leverage those platforms to create this piece of technology, and I'm not a techie, right? And that's not a story I'm telling myself. I am not a techie. But it's okay because that's why you hire a team. And so I immersed myself in the DC tech community. And because of that blending of attending all these events, meeting all these people, I got to meet Mark Cuban and talk to him and just like Jeff Bezos and just like a lot of opportunities that I received. But because I'm such a social media maven, I shared them all. But the thing is, I could never get that tech up off the ground. I hire people and it just would go sideways. And it was just, it drove me nuts. I was spending so much money, time. My partners at the law firm were like, "We really think that you're more focused on that than this." And they were right, but I needed the money, right?
Right. Like, I can't get up. Right.
So all of that was happening, and I was feeling like a huge failure because remember, I'm also coming out of my second divorce, right? So you just, everything just feels like a failure. Nothing is going right in my life, right?
Because even the middle of COVID,
in 2011, right? Exactly. So this is 2011, 2012, 2013, 14. So I'm trying for years and years to figure this out. And what happened is during that exact same sort of period of time, women were inboxing me to ask me how I got so many opportunities, how I was able to do lean startup competitions and all these other things. And I realized that there was a dearth of information and resources for women to help them take the next step, whether it was tech or entrepreneurship. And that's how Her Power Hustle got born, because I already had, you know, this background in podcasting since 2009. And using social media and all of these experiences, but the failure of being able to bring this stupid piece of technology to fruition ever, it never got created. But what grew out of that was the Her Power Hustle podcast. And through that, I've interviewed Guy Kawasaki and Peter Shankman. I've met Gary Vaynerchuk, all of that because I pivoted to how can I help women entrepreneurs get the information and the resources that they need. So Her Power Hustle didn't have a failure point. The failure point was why I launched Her Power Hustle. Right.
But that's so awesome, because basically what you did is you said, okay, this is clearly not what I'm meant to do.
Clearly.
Right? I mean, that's basically what happened is you pivoted away from something you thought was really important and realized that it was actually leading you to a different thing.
Right.
And exactly. You were willing to do that. You're willing to take that pivot. I mean, it took you a while.
Right. Because the thing about
lots
it
of
is,
money.
We won't even talk about that. But what's interesting is that, you know, I saw a meme recently and I've heard the sentiment elsewhere. Distractions look like opportunities when you don't know where you're going.
Yeah.
Right. So along that path, I took a lot of things that look like opportunities and I took chances and I was able to capture them because I'm a storyteller, right? And I capture my story as I go and share it on social media and people see it. But some of them were like epic failing forward, right? Yeah. You know?
Yep.
So it just, and one thing would lead to the next, to the next, to the next. I mean, I got invited to be a social media maven to cover President Obama's State of the Union address 2 years in a row.
Because of that.
All of that is like, okay, yeah, I failed in one sense, but it created, I heard you on one of your episodes interviewing someone, I think her name might have been Elkhart, but she was talking about the chrysalis, that period of time from when the caterpillar goes to the butterfly and it's in the goo. And I think those years for me in some ways were the goo, but I was just like moving all about. And they say if someone helps the caterpillar, if you try to slice it open, it will die.
Right.
You can't help it. You cannot help it.
I think that was the Meg Nocero interview. Mm-hmm. She's a powerhouse like you. Oh my gosh. Actually, she's in Florida. She's in Miami.
Oh,
I'll have to make sure you guys get connected.
Oh, thank you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I love that.
Yeah. That butterfly, the caterpillar to butterfly is a really big theme. And I keep coming back to it for this year in particular. Because so many of us are sheltering in place. And so this is kind of an opportunity to build our cocoon and transform internally before we expose ourselves externally.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Okay, my brain is just like spinning right now. You were in the goo.
Yeah, but the goo, I mean, I also was comfortable there a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's warm.
Know. Yeah.
And that's, I think, you know, it's like being in the womb. You could easily make this analogy of being in the womb, that it's comfortable in there until it's not anymore. You know, there's so many analogies in nature for that transformation and the time that you spend in it. And in religious ceremonies and traditions, you think about the bar and bat mitzvah of Jewish communities, where you spend the year of your 12th year preparing for this welcome into adulthood for your bar mitzvah or your bat mitzvah if you're a girl. And you see it as the analogy of being in the womb and growing until you grow too big and you have to come out. And what is that? There was a rabbi who did a wonderful thing about lobsters, that they outgrow their shell. And this is how they grow, is their shell becomes so tight that it cracks. And they're forming a soft shell underneath as the harder shell is cracking. But for a little while, they are super vulnerable because they don't have their hard shell. But eventually it becomes hard again. And then again, it gets too small and it has to crack and they have to develop that shell again.
Absolutely. Now, there's so definitely, like you said, there are so many examples in nature of that, of how that works. And if we look to nature, but again, if we're in toddler mode,
we just want it and we want it now.
Exactly.
Oh, that just made me think of what is that? The Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory and Veronica.
Mm-hmm.
She wants it right now. She's a perpetual toddler.
Yes, exactly. We all have an inner Veronica, trust me.
I know, mine is screaming right now. What's next?
Right.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Oh my gosh. Oh, I love this. So let's wrap it up with one more story. I would like to hear more about the key story for you that's going to come out in this video about your community of women entrepreneurs. What is one story in that really lights you up? I mean, they all do, but one just popped into your head. I can imagine you have an image of a particular person in your head.
No, that's just the interesting part of it. It's the community. That's it. It is not any one single person, and it's not about me. It's interesting because that's what the interviewer said too. She had preconceived notions, and it's funny because she's actually a member of our community, right? Mm-hmm. So she's been with us for years, and that's one of the pieces of our community is we turn to each other when we need things and need to purchase, and we will look internally first. And, you know, she sat down, and at the end of our conversation, she said, you know, I was coming in here, and I thought it was a story about you, and I thought it was a story about the space, but it's neither. It's a story about the whole community and how interlocked we are, you know? So there are a bajillion stories. Bajillion is a word. You can look it up because I'm telling you, if bootylicious can be a word, bajillion can be a word, right? So, but you know, there are so many, there are a number of stories that are just so rich that have touched all of us in such different ways about being in the space. What I would say has bubbled up from the testimonials that I had not anticipated is there is a use of the word fun. Oh, and I thought that was interesting. Now, I was like, wow, you know, because not that I was creating a serious space, that wasn't at all in my mind. It wasn't about being serious or fun. It wasn't a thought. And so to hear that word resonate throughout different testimonials was really interesting to me. That was interesting. That is the word you would not use to go to the post office. That's not the word you would use.
Or to the office.
Well, that's general. What I'm saying. Exactly. Yeah. That's not the word that you would attribute to most spaces where work gets done. And work does get done. Right. Unless you're in Silicon Valley. Right. And people are just throwing money around and giving you sleep pods and things like that. Well, we don't have the sleep pods and we don't have little golf courts.
But the beauty of that is you can't tell people we're fun. Mm-hmm. You can't tell people that. You have to demonstrate it. And the fact that it was unintentional, but that was an ultimate result. Oh, I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, when you walk into our door, the first thing you see on the wall is a graphic that says "We all win." And "We all win" is actually our mantra. And the one thing I will say about that as an offshoot is that we all win collectively as a community. But, and I always want to be clear about this, especially because I work with women and we tend to sometimes be so collective and collaborative that we take ourselves out of a competition where we rightfully should be.
Right.
If it's between me and you, I win. Right. And it is okay. Yeah. We want healthy competition. However, it's not at the expense of our sisters. It's not at the expense of our integrity or anything else that would make us feel swarmy. So we all win is our ethos. And so therefore, if you move about this world saying, how can I help someone else and still get what I need? Right. It's mutual. It's definitely about mutual obligation to each other to be fair. Right? I'm going to interact with you in a fair and equitable way. And we both get what we need and want out of this interaction, whatever that is and however that's defined. So for me, that's really the story of her power space. The story of her power space is that we can have a community of women that get along and don't backbite. We can have a community of women who beat all the myths. And we can have a community that is woman forward, men welcoming, and men can represent 75% of our income on any given month. Knowing that this is her power space, they don't care because it works for them. It solves the pain point that they have. So to me, the story that comes out of her power space this year is that when you know what you know, what you know, what your core is, your gifting, And if I know nothing else, I know that my gifting is to decrease isolation and increase wealth for women entrepreneurs, especially solopreneurs and side hustlers. And everything else falls away. And so anyone else who needs that will show up and they will thrive.
So what's the image that pops into your head when you think of this space? Like, what are you seeing right now in your head?
Peace. For me, it's peace. I'm happy there. It's actually my happy place. I say it all the time. It's my happy place. I still didn't attribute fun to it, right? Fun was the word that they used to ascribe to this space. Right. But I say thank you verbally to my space every single night when I turn off the light. And I thank her. She is brick and mortar, but so much more. She is a living, breathing energy that people feel when they walk through that door, including myself. And some of that I will take credit for, but it's because of the collective and because I am externally motivated to have what people need. And see how I brought that right back around?
One day we will be in there together with a glass of wine.
Oh, my, a whole bottle. I look forward to it. Oh, yeah, we definitely are stocked for that. So we're ready.
You just put that image in my head. That's like, I see it happening. I have a dear friend in Naples, and I'm going to go visit her next year as soon as things open up. And so I am in, and I will bring her with me. And we will walk in there and be happy and fun, both.
I love it. I love it. I love it. The space is super intentional. I would say if there's any one word that comes out of the space from my perspective, it's intention.
Intentional. Oh, I love the word intention. Mm-hmm. Michelle, this has been such a pleasure, as I knew it would be.
And thank you, Sarah.
Grinning from ear to ear.
Me too.
For the next 24 hours at least. Thank you so much for joining me. And for our listeners, what's the best way to reach you, Michelle?
Absolutely. If they go to herpowermoves.com/letschat, no punctuation, LETSCHAT, they can schedule a 15-minute chat with me if they so choose. And then just to stay abreast of what we have going on, you can go to herpowermoves.com/stayintheknow. And just hear about events. We are an international group. So you don't have to be in South Florida. Our brick and mortar business is in South Florida in terms of the co-working space. But we are an organization of almost 2,000 women worldwide. So I would love to connect with folks. You can reach us at herpowermoves.com/stayintheknow.
Awesome.
K-N-O-W.
We don't want to use the word no.
Right. Stay in a place of no.
Well, I guess if you overcommit yourself, that's probably a good website.
Right. This is true.
But I will definitely include these links in the blog post associated with the podcast, as well as a link to connect with Michelle on LinkedIn, where she has some really good content that she shares there as well. So for our listeners, I highly encourage you to reach out, connect with Michelle, and get to know her, because you will not be disappointed.
Sarah, this was amazing. Thank you so much for your generosity. And I just thank all of your listeners for tuning in.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to this episode of Your Stories Don't Define You, How You Tell Them Will. The book of the same title is now available, and the audiobook version will be released in November 2020. If you're ready to uncover your stories and learn to uncover the stories of the people around you to create stronger connections and healthier communities, visit elkinsconsulting.com. And while you're visiting the website, you can learn more about the book and the work we do to improve communication among teams and through our one-to-one coaching. Thank you.